Today is Thursday, January 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Protesters stormed the U.S. Capitol as Congress met to certify the 2020 election. The disorder escalated and prompted calls from both President Donald Trump and President-elect Joe Biden for the actions to cease.
Go home and go home in peace.
And it must end now.
We'll have that story and more next. Protesters stormed into the U.S. Capitol Wednesday, forcing law enforcement to quickly evacuate legislators and staff, though they would resume hours later to continue their work. The unprecedented assault on the building turned deadly when a woman caught in the protest was shot and later died. Wednesday evening, it still was not clear who she was or who fired the gun. Later, law enforcement officers cleared the building where they found exploded explosives. The protesters assaulted the Capitol as members of Congress were meeting to confirm U.S. President Donald Trump's election loss to President-elect Joe Biden in November. Shortly before his supporters broke into the legislative chambers, Trump addressed a rally of thousands outside the White House.
We will never give up. We will never concede. It doesn't happen. You don't concede when there's theft involved. Our country has had enough. We will not take it anymore. And that's what this is all about.
Trump, who has spent much of his time since the November 3rd election trying to overturn the results, falsely said that he won as he spoke at an outdoor stage framing the White House, which Biden is due to move into in about 2 weeks' time. And not far from the White House, hundreds of Trump supporters overturned barricades and clashed with police on the grounds of the U.S. Capitol, where Congress was meeting. Protesters clambered onto the structures erected for Biden's inauguration ceremony on January 20th to unfurl Trump flags and gathered on the Capitol steps. Trump returned to the White House as some at the rally marched down Pennsylvania Avenue to join the protesters storming the Capitol grounds. Members of militia groups and far-right groups, some in body armor, mingled with the crowds, and other government office buildings were on high alert. The president tweeted, quote, "Please support our Capitol Police and law enforcement. They are truly on the side of our country. Stay peaceful," as events continued to unfold. Democratic Senator Bob Menendez wrote on Twitter, quote, "My staff and I are safe and following guidance from Capitol Police. The scene in the Capitol goes against every value we pledge to uphold as a nation. Democracy will prevail." Mayor Muriel Bowser ordered a citywide curfew for Washington from 6 p.m. on Wednesday, January 6th, until 6 a.m. on Thursday, January 7th. After several members of Congress called for Trump to tell his supporters to leave, the president then posted a video message on Twitter before the curfew began.
We have to have peace. So go home. We love you. You're very special. You've seen what happens. You see the way others are treated that are so bad and so evil. I know how you feel. But go home and go home in peace.
The chairman of the House Energy and Commerce Committee on Wednesday urged Facebook and Twitter to remove U.S. President Donald Trump from social media platforms. In a rare move, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter blocked or restricted access to that video. Facebook officials said it violated standards and could contribute to more violence. Twitter also said the same. Twitter also said Wednesday that it had locked President Trump's account for at least 12 hours, adding that future violations of the social media platform's rules, including civic integrity or violent threat policies, could result in permanent suspension of his account. Facebook is locking President Trump's page for 24 hours. President-elect Joe Biden also addressed the nation, calling on disruptions to the American democratic process to cease.
All of you have been watching what I've been watching. At this hour, our democracy is under an unprecedented assault, unlike anything we've seen in modern times. An assault on the citadel of liberty, the Capitol itself. An assault on the people's representatives and the Capitol Hill police sworn to protect them. and the public servants who work at the heart of our republic. An assault on the rule of law like few times we've ever seen it. An assault on most sacred of American undertakings, the doing of the people's business. Let me be very clear. The scenes of chaos at the Capitol do not reflect a true America, do not represent who we are. What we're seeing are a small number of extremists dedicated to lawlessness. This is not dissent. It's disorder. It's chaos. It borders on sedition. And it must end now.
Bowser asked the Pentagon to call in the Washington, D.C. National Guard to assist federal and local law enforcement. Before the disruptions by protesters on Capitol grounds, a joint session of the U.S. Congress convened to certify Democrat Joe Biden's win in the November 2020 presidential election. Vice President Mike Pence presided over the session.
Madam Speaker, members of Congress, pursuant to the Constitution and the laws of the United States, the Senate and House of Representatives are meeting in joint session to verify the certificates and count the votes of the electors of the several states for President and Vice President of the United States. After ascertainment has been had that the certificates are authentic and correct in form, the tellers will count and make a list of the votes cast by the electors of the several states. The tellers on the part of the two houses have taken their places at the clerk's desk. Without objection, the tellers will dispense with the reading of the formal portions of the certificates. After ascertaining that the certificates are regular in form and authentic, the tellers will announce the votes cast by the electors for each state, beginning with Alabama.
A group of Republican lawmakers was expected to object to the presidential election result, and Arizona's representatives became the first to do so.
Are there any objections to counting the certificate of vote of the state of Arizona that the teller has verified appears to be regular in form and authentic?
Mr. Vice President, I, Paul Gosar from Arizona.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Arizona rise?
I rise up for myself and 60 of my colleagues to object to the counting of the electoral ballots from Arizona.
Is the objection in writing and signed by a senator?
Yes, it is.
It is.
An objection presented in writing and signed by both a representative and a senator complies with the law, Chapter 1 of Title 3 of the United States Code. The clerk will report the objection.
Objection to counting the electoral votes of the state of Arizona. We, a member of the House of Representatives and a United States Senator, object to the counting of the electoral votes of the state of Arizona on the ground that they were not, under all of the known circumstances, regularly given.
Are there further objections to the certificates from the state of Arizona? The chair hears none. The two houses will withdraw from joint session. Each house will deliberate separately on the pending objection and report its decision back to the joint session. The Senate will now retire to its chamber.
Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell objected to the position taken by his colleagues.
If this election were overturned by mere allegations from the losing side, our democracy would enter a death spiral. We'd never see the whole nation accept an election again.
Although Biden won the November 3rd general election by more than 7 million popular votes and a 306 to 232 margin in the Electoral College, Republican President Donald Trump, without evidence, continues to claim his loss was the result of widespread fraud. As protests continued outside and individuals scuffled with law enforcement, members of Congress were told to evacuate and shelter in secure locations. North Carolina Republican Representative Greg Murphy spoke with VOA and other reporters.
A lot of folks were concerned and a lot of folks were worried, but we were evacuated in a safe and orderly manner, and that's what's happening here.
Capitol Police has been
doing a great job. Is this going to shut down everything for today now?
What's that?
Is this shutting down and ending everything
for today? Oh, I don't know about that. I know that the Capitol Police and all the other folks are working their very best to keep us all safe.
What does this say about our democracy?
Well, it doesn't say anything about our democracy. It says something about certain individuals that don't know how to behave.
Will the session be resumed today?
Hopefully so. I've been in a lot of situations in my life I never thought I'd be in before, but this is part of life, and unfortunately, democracy is messy. There are certain individuals here that have not behaved like they should have, and this is not an attempt against democracy. It's just a bad behavior by some individuals.
Well, the U.S. Constitution states that the certification of Electoral College votes must begin on January 6th. It does not mean it must be finished that same day. It only states that the election results must be certified before the presidential inauguration on January 20th. Vice President Pence reconvened the Senate a few hours later.
Let's get back to work.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell addressed his colleagues and the American people.
The United States Senate will not be intimidated. We will not be kept out of this chamber by thugs, mobs, or threats. We will not bow to lawlessness or intimidation. We are back at our posts. We will discharge our duty under the Constitution and for our nation. And we're going to do it tonight.
He was followed by Democratic Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
Foreign embassies cabled home their home capitals to report the harrowing scenes at the very heart of our democracy. This will be a stain on our country, not so easily washed away. The final, terrible, indelible legacy of the 45th President of the United States, undoubtedly our worst. I want to be very clear. Those who perform these reprehensible acts cannot be called protesters. No, these were rioters and insurrectionists, goons and thugs, domestic terrorists.
At least one senator, Georgia's Kelly Loeffler, who lost her re-election runoff race Tuesday, said that she had originally planned to object to certifications, but changed her mind based on Wednesday's events. VOA has continuing coverage of the events unfolding in Washington on our hourly newscasts and voanews.com. Since the general election in November, two races had remained undecided, both in the southeastern state of Georgia. On Tuesday, constituents went to the polls to choose who they wanted to represent Georgia in the U.S. Senate. It was a race to determine whether Democrats or Republicans would control the congressional chamber. Catherine Gibson has this update from Dalton, Georgia.
That's right. So Georgia had a twin pair of Senate runoff elections that really hasn't happened before in runoff elections. It's highly unusual that both of these elections would be the elements that would determine the makeup of the U.S. Senate and the control for a new presidential administration. But here we are, both races gave us winners, and they both gave us Democratic winners in this traditionally Republican state. And that really speaks to the efforts that Democrats have made here in the state of Georgia, a southern U.S. state with a history of racial strife. They have made progress in terms of getting out the Democratic vote and flipping this state blue. Now they are sending two Democratic senators to the U.S. Capitol, and they will be able to work with a President Biden to get legislation through a Democratic Congress.
You and I have spoken about the large number of early voting and mail-in voting because of COVID-19 and because of the enormous importance this election has on the stewardship of the U.S. Senate. What can you tell us about the voting that took place not only on Tuesday, but throughout the contested election?
Absolutely. I mean, going around the state in the days leading up to the runoff elections, that was an issue that was in the minds of both Republican and Democratic voters. I asked every single voter I spoke to if they felt like their vote counted here in Georgia, if their vote mattered. Of course, there was a lot more distrust on the Republican side, who said they really did believe what President Trump was saying, alleging voter fraud, saying that there were issues with the Dominion voting machines, that there were issues with the mail-in balloting. But I also heard some concern from Democratic voters who were worried about how the entire system is going to hold up under this strain. So I think that a lot of people are looking at this issue and thinking that this is something that we really need to address so that there is faith in the political system. Of course, the Democratic voters I spoke to said that they really did believe that eventually their vote would matter and would count.
Catherine Gibson is VOA's congressional correspondent. The election of Democratic Senators Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff means the Republican and Democratic parties each have 50 seats in the chamber. As Vice President-elect Kamala Harris presides over the Senate, that gives the Democrats a 51-50 majority. Now, speaking at a news conference carried by Georgia Public Broadcasting, Georgia election official Gabriel Sterling says the president's accusations of voter fraud have no basis in fact.
No evidence of any irregularities. The biggest thing we've seen is from the president's fertile mind of finding fraud where none exists.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA reached a major milestone in its preparation for the scheduled October launch of the Lucy space probe. Lucy will be conducting the first mission to explore the Trojan asteroids. Trojans are grouped in two large clusters that precede and follow the giant planet in its orbit around the Sun. Scientists think these objects are leftovers of the ancient material that shaped the outer planets. NASA reports the Lucy Thermal Emission Spectrometer, the second of the mission's three scientific instruments, was recently incorporated onto the spacecraft. The instrument will measure the far infrared energy released by the asteroids. The final instrument to be installed, expected to arrive soon at Lucy's construction site, is a visible imager and infrared spectroscopic mapper called LIRELF. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. New strains of the coronavirus causing the COVID-19 pandemic have evolved, raising alarms with public health experts. The viruses appear to be more infectious, making them harder to control. But experts say the new vaccines against them should still work. VOA's Steve Barragona has more.
The streets of London have gone quiet again. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson put the nation under lockdown after a new variant of the coronavirus emerged.
It's clear that we need to do more together to bring this new variant under control.
In South Africa, another strain has doctors worried, says University of KwaZulu-Natal epidemiologist Tulio de Oliveira.
It has been dominating almost every infection that we have in the coastal area. This is from Eastern Cape all the way to Cape Town.
The UK strain has spread to at least 39 other countries. The South African variant has turned up in another 9. Both seem to be driving their country's surges in infections. But scientists cannot say for sure yet, says Johns Hopkins University immunologist Andrew Pekosh.
That really needs to be investigated in other countries to see, you know, is this just something that happened in England for a confluence of other reasons? Or is this something that is really specifically associated with this virus? And if it is, then we should be seeing that in other countries.
Okay. The variants do not appear to make people any sicker, but the increase in cases will likely mean more hospitalizations and more deaths, Pekosh says.
If you simply have a virus that can infect more people, then the total number of people go up and all of those other parameters go up as well, too.
The new mutated viruses have appeared just as vaccines to fight the pandemic begin to arrive. But the vaccines should still work, says the British government's chief scientific advisor, Patrick Vallance.
When a vaccine is given, you don't just make one antibody against one bit. You make lots of antibodies against lots of different bits. And so it's unlikely that all of that would be escaped by any mutation.
Tests are underway to make sure. Viruses mutate all the time, and the vaccines eventually will need to be updated. But that's easier than ever, Pekosh says.
Particularly these mRNA vaccines have the potential to really quickly be updated to whatever is circulating.
Both the Pfizer-BioNTech and Moderna vaccines are this type. If the new strains take over, these vaccines may allow for quick adaptation to an ever-changing virus. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
Recent violence in Mali, Niger, and the Central African Republic have left hundreds dead in recent weeks. But the United States envoy to the Sahel region says there is hope in the West African region. Some nations have recently held peaceful elections, with more elections to come in 2021. VOA's Anita Powell takes it from here.
The top U.S. envoy to Africa's Sahel region acknowledges that it has been a rough few weeks in the sprawling desert region, which covers the West African nations of Burkina Faso, Chad, Mali, Mauritania, and Niger. The region is beset by a wave of deadly violence from extremist groups, with more than 1,000 violent incidents in the first half of 2020, according to a report from the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project. Most recently, in western Niger, extremists attacked three villages, killing more than 100 civilians. Peter Pham, the U.S. Special Envoy to the Sahel, strongly condemned the attacks in a call to journalists this week, calling the perpetrators cowardly and godless. But he quickly added, there is cause for hope as Niger heads to a second round of presidential elections in February.
We have congratulated the people of Niger who exercised their democratic right to vote in their presidential and legislative elections on December 27th and look forward to observing an equally successful runoff presidential election process on February 21st. These elections hold the promise of Niger's historic first peaceful transition of power from one democratically elected president to another.
It's no accident, Pham told journalists, that he mentions elections and instability in the same breath. That's because he contends that these outbreaks of violence across the region have one common cause.
The heart of the crisis in the Sahel, as I've repeatedly emphasized, is one of state legitimacy. Whether or not citizens perceive that their government is legitimate, equitable, able and willing to meet their needs. This includes ensuring justice and accountability for human rights violations and abuses committed by security forces. Absent Sahelian government actions that demonstrate this commitment, no degree of international engagement is likely to succeed.
That's why he added the majority of U.S. government assistance to the region comes in the form of health, development, and humanitarian assistance. The U.S. has invested over $1.5 billion in those sectors from 2017 to 2019. In that same time period, he said, the U.S. provided about $467 million in security assistance. Ornella Moderan, a researcher who heads the Sahel program for the Institute for Security Studies, agrees on the importance of state legitimacy. She pointed to Mali, which had a coup in August because of this very lack of confidence in the state. But, she said, to truly build legitimate governments, societies have to come together voluntarily and have genuinely inclusive dialogue. She spoke to VOA via Skype from Bamako, Mali.
Now, the question I think is, to what extent can external actors like the U.S. actually support this and accompany this? There is a need for national ownership, and there's a need for dialogue, really, between ruling elites and common Malians. This is really the root cause of where we are right now. So it's important that while we're trying to reestablish a public dialogue, a national dialogue, that we make sure that everyone is included. And this means making sure that no ethnic groups are sidelined, no religious groups, no gender groups. And this is, of course, very challenging, but very important.
Is that happening? Maybe, said Pham, pointing to recent presidential elections in Ghana and Burkina Faso, where both incumbents were re-elected. Pham was sent to both inaugurations as part of a U.S. presidential delegation. In both polls, the opposition cried foul, though the results were nevertheless certified. And both presidents have vowed to work for all citizens. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
A London court has denied bail to WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange just days after he won an attempt to stop the United States government's efforts to extradite him. Reuters' Adam Reed reports.
Julian Assange, the founder of WikiLeaks, has been denied bail by a London court on the grounds that he may be a flight risk, citing the 7 years he spent evading authorities by hiding in Ecuador's embassy there. The ruling came only days after he secured a victory in his effort to stop his extradition to the United States from Britain. At the time, a court ruled he should not be extradited because he'd be at risk of suicide. And after that victory, he asked to be released on bail. But the US government is still pursuing him in the British legal system. And on Wednesday, a judge at London's Westminster Magistrates Court said, quote, the outcome of this appeal is not yet known. This was the reaction of his partner, Stella Morris, outside the court.
This is a huge disappointment. Julian should not be in Belmarsh prison in the first place. I urge the Department of Justice to drop the charges and the President of the United States to pardon Julian.
Assange has spent the last 8 years either in prison or holed up in Ecuador's embassy. He's accused of espionage against the United States and conspiracy to hack government computers. Some of WikiLeaks' most notable leaks include the Hillary Clinton campaign emails in 2016, military logs from the war in Afghanistan, diplomatic cables, and the gun camera video of American attack helicopters killing a dozen people in Iraq in 2007, including two Reuters journalists. Supporters of Assange say he's a hero for exposing what they believe are abuses of power by the United States.
Free Julian Assange!
Opponents cast him as a dangerous man who's undermined the safety of the West.
Reuters reporter Adam Reed. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to stay up to date with world news and events 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser to voanews.com. And don't forget, with our top of the hour newscast, you can be updated 24 hours a day on your local VOA affiliate. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and have a tremendous Thursday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Venezuelan people at home and abroad recently had the opportunity to voice their opinion of the illegitimate Nicolas Maduro regime through the Consulta Popular, or People's Vote. From December 7th to 12th, millions of Venezuelans weighed in digitally or at in-person polling places in Venezuela, other Latin American nations, the U.S., and Europe. The referendum was organized by the Venezuelan opposition, held under the authority of the legitimate National Assembly and in accordance with the Venezuelan Constitution. The Consulta Popular provided a platform for Venezuelans, including those forced to flee abroad under threat of persecution, torture, or death, to demand free and fair presidential and legislative elections. Secretary Pompeo congratulated the Venezuelan people on the success of the Consulta Popular, noting that the Venezuelan people clearly rejected the electoral fraud perpetrated by the illegitimate regime of Nicolas Maduro in the National Assembly elections of December 6th. The Consulta outcome, declared Secretary Pompeo, is a clear mandate that the interim government must continue fighting for democracy's return to Venezuela. He added that the Venezuelan people deserve the support of every democratic nation in this struggle. Secretary Pompeo described the Consulta as an audacious democratic project and an unprecedented achievement despite all the challenges of life in Venezuela. Gas shortages, electricity outages, and regime harassment, such as blocked and deleted websites, violent intimidation, repression, and persecution. The success of the Consulta demonstrates the power of millions of Venezuelan people to organize and rally for change, and energizes the fight to return free and fair presidential and parliamentary elections to Venezuela. The democratically elected National Assembly and the voice of the Venezuelan people are the only thing standing in the way of authoritarianism in Venezuela, declared Secretary Pompeo. The international community can best support democracy in Venezuela by uniting behind the Venezuelan people as they raise their voices to demand an end to the brutal Maduro dictatorship and a return to democracy.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.